Good morning, everyone. My name is Leo Tiwin. I just want to take this moment before our lesson to thank Tony for inviting me and to the Ottawa Church for allowing me this opportunity to share some thoughts with you this morning. Now, I know that these are very difficult times. Everywhere across the world, people are basically secluded. You know, this social distancing has taken effect. People are basically staying at home. Hopefully they can work from home if others have been laid off. This is the first time, I think, in the history of mankind where the whole world basically has been shut down. It's hard to travel. You can't cross borders. People can't work. We're trying in every way to prevent the furthering of this virus that is so difficult. It has taken the lives of so many people, and we're at a time where, you know, we've never seen anything like this. I think for the rest of our time on this earth, we probably will remember this time. It'll be a moment in time that we will share, and we'll say, where were you when this happened? But this morning, I want to share with you what I believe is one of the most difficult things that seems to be across the board, everyone seems to be struggling with, and that is fear. And the challenge it is for Christians especially is to deal with this idea of fear. The title of our lesson this morning is called Fear or Faith. Fear is something that is very natural, is actually given to us by God when He created us. We need fear to protect us. When you're a little child, you don't realize that stoves are hot, and your parents have to help you to understand not to touch the burner of the stove. You may get a smack on the hand, or if you touch it, you may get a burn, and you go, oh, I don't think I'll ever do that again. So you learn to be afraid of certain things. If you're walking down a street in the city, and there's a dark alley, and you think, I don't think I want to walk down that. That looks a little scary. You see, fear protects us. It allows us to live the way we need to. If you see a lion or a pride of lions, in front of you, you figure out real quick that that's probably not the direction you want to go. You know, you're going to head the other direction because you realize that something bad may happen. And so fear has a place in our life. And yet the reality is sometimes fear goes to the extreme. We can be afraid of things that aren't there. Or worse, we can be afraid, as in this case, of a virus, something that you can't even see except under a microscope, that is consuming the world. It is easily transmitted from person to person. And for especially older people like myself, who are the prime targets in some ways, where we are, if we get this virus, it can be very deadly for us. And so fear is something that we understand. It is something that is happening everywhere. I think people, for different reasons are afraid these days. I hope, and I want to share this with you, I hope the lesson today doesn't oversimplify everything. There are no easy answers to what's going on. I understand that. I'm going to suggest a few things. They may be helpful to you. I hope they are. They're things that I feel personally that I focus on myself so that I can face these days and not be overcome by the fear that exists. I want to begin with showing you a slide here of all of the this is an old stat. These stats change by the hour. But this slide tells us that there was 2,100,667 people that have the coronavirus. Of that, about 136,000 have died and about 523,000 have recovered. Now, you can go on CNN and every day they have that banner to the right of the screen that tells you, the most modern update. Those are supposed to help us. They're facts. But sometimes those facts create more fear. Do we really need to know that? I don't know. Sometimes I think I shouldn't watch things like CNN because it tends to create this anxiety about what's going to happen next. But I do think perspective is very, very important, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's cancer or heart disease or, you know, or this pandemic, this COVID-19. The next slide I want to show you is something that I think is very, very sobering. In 1918, the Spanish flu hit the world. The world was, you know, at the time, it was at the end of World War I. World War I was from 1914 to 1918. And as the soldiers, as the war ended and the soldiers went home, they carried with them this N1H1 virus, this Spanish flu, they called it. And the number of people that died because of this Spanish flu is staggering. There's, excuse me, there's a close to 20 to 100 million. Now, they didn't have the ability to log things like we do, but 20 to 100 million people died. That's staggering. Now, if you remember, the number of people that have died so far from COVID is only about 136,000. Now, I'm not trying to make anything light of that, but the reality is that there was a lot more people died in 1918. We remember World War I, which was, like I said, from 1914 to 1918. 20 million people died in the war, 10 million soldiers, 10 million civilians. So when you think of what, you know, that time period in our history, the Spanish flu killed a lot more people than World War I. That's perspective. I only share that not to say that, you know, make light of the 136,000 people that have died from COVID so far, but give you a reality, it could be a lot worse. And I think because of our technology and our ability, you know, our scientists that have been able to find a lot of things to help us, we don't have as many deaths as we could have if it were back 100 years ago. So, you know, perspective is very, very important if we're going to live this life that we have. In the next slide, though, I want to share with you what I think is one of the most important ideas of rekindling faith. And faith, it is very, very important. If you look at the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 14, verses 10 through 12, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? Why have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the desert." This is the moment in the history of the people of God that is very, very shameful. They've been in captivity for about 430 years. They've been slaves. They're the ones that built those things that you can go to Egypt and see now, the pyramids, etc. They were enslaved for 430 years. And then God said to them, "Hey, look, I'm going to get you out." God raised up Moses, who was actually in Pharaoh's household, but raised up Moses to be the leader that would lead them out of Egypt. If you look at this next slide, I'll show you the difference in what happened here. All of the different things that happened, there were 10, it was like a 10-lesson correspondence course that God sent to the people of Egypt. I mean, we're talking about water turned to blood, there was flies, there was gnats, there was darkness, there was everything that God threw at them. And sometimes Pharaoh would change, make up his mind, say, "Oh, I've got to let you go. I'm sorry. You can go." And then, oh, he'd change his mind, and then there would be another lesson. And he wouldn't, "Oh, no, I'm not going to let you go." Finally, the 10th lesson was the one that really convinced him, as all the firstborn died in Egypt. And unless, obviously, the people of God were told to put the blood on their lintels or doorposts. And the result was that they didn't have anybody die, but the Egyptians had their firstborn die. Finally, Pharaoh says, okay, you can leave. Go. Get out of here. And so now the people of God gather together. And the Bible says there's about 600,000 men that they counted it by the men, which would probably be about 3 million people altogether that left Egypt heading toward the promised land. And in order to get to the promised land, what had to happen, though, is they got to the Red Sea. And they had this natural barrier that became, what are we going to do now? Here's 3 million people standing in Egypt waiting. Okay, how do I get across? What do I do? And they start to panic. That's what I read, okay? They're panicking, thinking, oh, we're going to die out here in the desert. It's terrible. Why did you do this to us, Moses? Didn't we tell you to leave us alone? We were happy being slaves for 430. They weren't. But you see, the fear just caused them to think in a way that wasn't very helpful. As we go to, and now I want to show you Exodus chapter 14. If you turn your Bibles to Exodus chapter 14, verses 13 and 14. Moses answered the people. He said, do not be afraid. You see, they were filled with fear. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring to you today. The Egyptians you see today you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Sometimes in the moments of panic that come because of the fear, the things that we see that are happening around us, what do we need? We need to do, as Moses said here, be still. What an inspiring leader Moses was. He was very direct. I mean, he didn't hold back. He said, guys, you guys are filled with fear. Do not be afraid. Stop it. But you need to understand that God is at work here. Now, I'm not even sure that Moses understood exactly what was going to take place. I don't know that God told him exactly, yeah, I'm going to part the waters and they're going to, the Egyptians going to try to run across and I'm going to bring the water. I don't know that that was exactly what happened. But the reality was Moses trusted God. Moses looked and said, look, we've had these 10 miraculous things that have taken place that have shown us God is at work. So why do you think that God would bring us all the way to the Red Sea and then abandon us? Have faith, trust, be still, because God is about to do something that is going to shock you. In the next slide, I want you to focus on this. It says, faith doesn't make things easy. It makes them possible. Wow. That is so important. You see, sometimes as Christians, we think, well, because we have faith, our lives should be real easy now. That's not true. Faith is not necessarily something that's very easy to even develop. It takes a lot of work. It's hard. It's hard work that we have to have this kind of faith every day, every moment of every day. We don't walk by sight, the Bible says. We walk by faith. So faith isn't easy, but it does make things possible. When the moments of our lives when we trust God in a faithful way and we see him work and do something that we never expected, those moments are very special in our lives. They might be special memories that you refer to often as you live your life later on and may face another difficult time and you think, well, wait a minute, God took care of me over here in the beginning. I remember that. Well, he'll take care of me here too. And I think that's very important that we always remember that faith isn't easy, but God makes it possible. Well, let's talk just a little bit. The next thing I want to share with you is the reality of some of the things that we're afraid of. First thing, getting sick. This virus has caused lots of people to be sick. Over, 2 million have gotten the virus. Most of them got sick, some of them very sick. Our health very often now is very uncertain. Now, you may not have thought of that before. Before this virus came along, you might be young, you might be healthy, you might think, you don't even think about your health because it's not something that you're concerned about. But now I think a lot of people think about their health. You ever gone to Costco lately? Man, you got to line up. I mean, my wife went to Costco twice yesterday. The lines were around the block, people standing 6 feet apart. And you go in and they wipe down every cart. You can't just wander around. They have only have so many people that are in there. Everything now is geared to trying to make sure that we don't get this virus and we're healthy and we're not, it's not going to consume us. That's one of the huge fears we face right now. Second thing we face is losing our job. For some of us, it's an impossible time. It's hard to imagine a time when all the restaurants in the country, in Canada, United States, are closed. Well, you can order, you can go in and get takeout. But can you imagine if someone said to you 2 months ago, do you know that not too long, a distant future, they're going to close all of the restaurants and you won't be able to go? You'd look at it and go, ah, come on, you're kidding. That can't happen. But it did happen. Literally thousands and thousands, millions of people are unemployed. Who thought that was coming? Who saw that coming? Nobody. Nobody. Third thing, the thing that's happened is this social distancing, they call it. We're alone. We're being alone. There's an increase in mental health issues because for many of us, we're alone. Now, I have a really great wife, so I'm not alone. We're alone together. And it, in some ways, it's really nice. It's our schedule has changed where you can't go out. So, every day what you're going to do. But the reality is for some people, especially older people, they're all by themselves. And people that contract this disease, this virus, they're by themselves in these rooms. They may not have any human contact at all other than nurses who come in periodically to take care of their needs. But then they're left alone. It's very, very difficult for people. We're not made to be people who, we have to socially interact all the time. If we don't, there's part of our whole psyche that is affected. Fourth thing, there's domestic violence. Sadly, now that people are together a lot, some people don't get along very well, and there's a lot of domestic violence. Kids, wives, there may be stress in the home. Someone lost a job. They're on top of each other. Mothers are having to teach their children now. They have to become the teachers, and dad may be trying to work in the whatever, or mom's working, in another room, and there's noise. There's just a lot of stress. And suddenly, the police are having to deal with a lot more domestic violence, which is very tragic. The fifth thing I think that is a big concern is this concern for our children. What's going on with our kids? Will they finish this year out? Are they going back to school? Will this affect them? Will they be able to, I've got a granddaughter that's going into college in September. Will she be able to go into college? She was just accepted. She was very excited. She knows what school she's going to. But we don't know if the school's even going to be open. So will she be able to continue her post-secondary education? Or, we've got so many kids. What's going to happen? Are they going to be able to do the right exams, do the right tests? All of these things, huge questions that exist. And then the sixth thing I think that is huge right now is the stock market. The stock market has decreased decreased by about 30%. It's huge, the amount of money that has been lost out of the stock market. And what do you do? Everyone says, oh, don't worry about it. Just keep, don't panic. Don't be afraid. Just stay in and, it'll come back. But we don't know what's going to happen. The future is so hard to predict. So what do we do? We look at all these things and we have all of these triggers in our life right now that are causing us, that are causing us to think fearful thoughts, wondering about what our future is going to be like. You and I need to be very, very motivated by our faith and really work hard at instilling and inflaming the faith that we have so that it ignites and keeps us more calm and at peace as we go through this difficult time. If you look at the next slide here, what I want to share with you here in Hebrews chapter 13. This is Psalm or Isaiah, where it talks about Jesus and how he is a prediction of who he would be. One of the titles of Jesus is he's called the Prince of Peace. It's very important that we remember where peace comes from. It doesn't come really from our TVs. It doesn't come from our leaders, although they try very hard. You notice how often these leaders every day stand in front of cameras, and what are they trying to do? They're trying to quell the fear. They're trying to tell us what they're doing so that we don't have to worry. So the thing, you know, it can be about, you know, well, this is how we're helping, you know, so, you know, our social, all of the doctors and nurses can get PPE and, you know, have enough things so that they can take care of us. Or it can involve, well, here's what we're doing to help you because you lost your job and we're all these social programs that have come into existence now. We need to understand that all of those things, and they may be helpful, but ultimately the kind of peace that we're looking for comes from within. And it, you know, if when you name Jesus, he's called the Prince of Peace. That really is super, super helpful in living a peaceful life. If we go to the next slide in Romans chapter 8, and this is one of my favorite chapter scriptures in the Bible. Paul writes in Romans chapter 8, verses 37 through 39, knowing all these things, we're more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I'm convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, either height nor depth, or anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. The reality is that this is just one, you know, challenge that we face. But life is filled with challenges. You know, you may have many more than this that you're dealing with right now. And, you know, it's hard to God, why are you allowing this to happen? Why are you doing this to me? And yet the reality is when we have the love of God, when God has demonstrated to us through Jesus and his death, the great power that exists, it's not death nor life, angels, demons, present, future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth. Everything that is out there, in God's eyes, he can control. And if we can just trust that God is in control, it makes a huge difference as we go forward in this journey we call life. In Luke chapter 8, verse 31, here's what the Bible teaches us. Here's Jesus. He says, give and it'll be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, it will be poured into your lap. For with the treasure, with measure you use, it will be measured to you. People, you got to understand, and this is something that happens when we get really afraid. When you're filled with fear, people tend to get very inward focused. They stop thinking about others, and they only think about themselves. Now, Jesus said, you know, when asked, what's the greatest command? He said, number one, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And the second is, love your neighbor as yourself. He doesn't tell us to love ourselves. We do that naturally. It's not hard for us to love ourselves. But the reality is that we've got to love God, and the second greatest is love your neighbor as yourself. I think sometimes when we're filled with fear, we only think of ourselves, and we stop thinking about the needs of others. And I think this is so important. Our world, you know, it's so touching sometimes to see how people are, you know, have done different things to express their appreciation for all the doctors and nurses and you know, the medical workers, the ambulance drivers, all of the people that are doing great things out there. And many times, you know, it's almost a thankless job that they're doing. And yet in New York City, all of the fire department, you know, were going by the hospitals, you know, trying to demonstrate how much they appreciate what they're doing. When we can think of the needs of others and courage, you can find maybe there's a neighbor that you're wondering, how are they doing? Are they okay? Maybe there's an older person, you know, and you're obviously you're thinking, well, maybe they're by themselves. How are they doing? And you can, you know, you can't, we're supposed to social distance. I understand that. But you can call them. We have a lot of ways to communicate by things like Zoom and through email and, you know, different things, texting, all of the things that exist today. We can still be in contact with people wondering, you know, how can we help? So don't stop giving, because God said if you give, he can give back to us. And I think in many ways, for those that have thought of others and done something special, the result is that they get a great feeling of satisfaction for what they've done. Finally, in Exodus chapter 14, let's go back to the story. This is back to Moses and those 3 million people that were standing at the Red Sea wondering what was going to happen. God said, okay, here's what's going to happen. And he parts the waters. And suddenly the sea that they thought, oh, I can't get across this. Suddenly there's dry land. Now there's got to be a wall of water. I don't know how high that wall was, but there's one on the left, there's one on the right. And then there's dry land in between. And they start walking across this dry land to get to the other side. Now, that would take some faith, to be honest. If you have any fear of water, you could understand how hard that might be just to even be in that predicament. But nonetheless, they moved, and they all got across, and they get to the other side. And Pharaoh and his army are there, and they go, oh, well, we could do that too. And so they charge right on through, trying to get across this dry land to get to the other side so that they can get these free labor back. And in Exodus chapter 14, verse 28, let's hear what happened. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and the horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of God and the Lord display against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and Moses, his servant. You can see the end of the story is that they didn't know what was going to happen. They were afraid of the Egyptian army. It was scaring them. And at the end of this story, trust God, and what happens? That fear is taken away, and now they're on the other side. They're free. For the first time in 430 years, they're free to go wherever they want. And Moses leads them, you know, toward the promised land. Unfortunately, these people fell back into moments of, you know, not believing real quick, but that's a whole other story. In conclusion, excuse me, I want to leave you with Psalm 46, verses 10 and 11. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. You know, the hardest thing to do when you're filled with fear is be still. One of the things that Connie and I have been doing a lot is walking. We just, you know, it's the one time we can get out of our house and, you know, it's get some exercise, try to stay healthy, but it's prayer walks. And you're walking and, you know, the birds are coming back. Things are starting to grow again. It's almost spring. It feels so wonderful to get out from the things that man has created and see the things that God has created. And God is awesome. He's created this beautiful world, and it's so easy to be still when you're surrounded by the beauty that God has made, not the beauty that man has made. And, you know, I go on those prayer walks and you feel relieved. you feel at peace. You can feel the anxiety level going down because just being surrounded by God's creation, but just praying, just laying out the challenges that you have, you know, the feelings of frustration or anger or fear that you're dealing with. I want to share with you in conclusion, we're going to sing one last song. And I want to share this with you. The song is It Is Well. You know this, I'm sure you do. This was written by a man in the 1800s. He was a prominent lawyer in Chicago, pretty wealthy. He had many properties that he owned. He had four daughters and one son. But tragedy struck. His son died unexpectedly. He lost his son. And then the great Chicago fire, if you're a history buff, you may remember this, that great Chicago fire destroyed nearly all of the property that he owned. And so he went from a very good life to a lot of challenges in his life. And he decided because of those challenges, he would send his wife and his four daughters on a trip. And so they got in a boat, headed across the ocean. Unfortunately, that boat sunk. And his four daughters drowned. The only one that escaped was the mother. And so the mother got back to her husband and said, look, this is what happened. Our daughters are gone. And so here's this man who had five children and they're all dead. Had all this property, it's gone. His life was like in shambles, filled with misery. He got on a ship to go get his wife. And while he's on that ship, he writes this beautiful, beautiful song, It Is Well. And the first line is, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Let's sing together this beautiful song. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well.